This is an event that will galvanize the emerging Federalist movement in America. It's Shays' Rebellion more than any single thing, which helps create the impetus behind the writing of the federal Constitution. And it's seen by everyone as a great challenge to American Republican government that people would have risen and attacked through violent means their own governments. Contrast that with Jefferson's view. He writes to James Madison in 1787, "I hold it that a little rebellion now and then is a good thing and is necessary in the political world as storms in the physical. Unsuccessful rebellions indeed generally establish the encroachments on the rights of the people which have produced them." An observation of this truth should render honest Republican governors so mild in their punishment of rebellions as not to discourage them too much. It is a medicine necessary for the sound health of government. To William Smith, who is exclaiming to him the need for a new, more powerful central government, he argues quite the contrary. Where does this anarchy exist? Where did it ever exist except in the single instance of Massachusetts? And can history produce an instance of rebellion so honorably conducted? I say nothing of its motives. They were founded in ignorance, not wickedness. God forbid we should ever be 20 years without such a rebellion. Then he goes into this bizarre calculus. He says, look, we've had 13 independent states. It's been 11 years. If you calculate it out, that's one rebellion every 150 years. That's not much. What country before ever existed a century and a half without a rebellion? And what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the right of resistance? What signify a few lives lost in a century or two? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. Our convention has been too much impressed by the insurrection of Massachusetts, and in the spur of the moment, they are setting up a kite to keep the henyard in order. This is a radical sentiment, right? Jefferson is embracing not just the right to revolution, but the right to insurrection, the right to rise at any time that one feels oppressed, even when it is, in fact, hysterical. Okay. I want now to turn to Jefferson's experience of the French Revolution in the moments we have left. Initially, Jefferson seems to have had some reservations about the possibilities of reform in France. I mentioned some of them in our first lecture. He was very put off by the influence of women in both the culture, society, and politics. And his proposals to his good friend, the Marquis de Lafayette, are extremely moderate. But when mob violence erupts in 1789, Jefferson enthusiastically embraces it. And he'll come to see the French and American revolutionary causes as essentially the same. He writes in 1789, "I have been through it daily, have observed the mobs with my own eyes in order to be satisfied of their objects, and declare to you that I saw so plainly the legitimacy of them that I have slept in my house as quietly through the whole as I ever did in the most peaceable moments." He's full of optimism that the French Revolution will achieve a remarkably peaceful resolution. "The National Assembly have now as clean a canvas to work on here as we had in America. Such has been the firmness and wisdom of their proceedings in moments of adversity, as well as prosperity, that I have the highest confidence that they will use their power justly. As far as I can collect from conversation with their members, the constitution they will propose will resemble that of England in its outlines, but not in its defects." So he sees likely to be a very moderate Whig reform. But even after it became clear that that was not to be the nature of the French Revolution, Jefferson continues to feel a deep and profound affiliation with the revolutionary cause. Indeed, it persists well into his tenure as Secretary of State in the Washington administration. In 1791, he writes to George Mason, "I consider the establishment and success of their government, that being revolutionary France, as necessary to stay up our own and to prevent it from falling back to that kind of halfway house, the English Constitution, which is what he'd originally wanted France to follow. It cannot be denied that we have among us a sect who believe that to contain whatever is perfect in human institutions, that the members of this sect," and here he clearly means the Federalists, "have many of them names and offices which stand high in the estimation of our countrymen. I still rely that the great masses of our community are untainted with these heresies, as is its head," clearly a swipe at Washington. Most convincingly of all, even the Jacobin terror, the rain of blood that Robespierre brought to France, that in fact killed many of Jefferson's closest friends and caused others to enter into exile, doesn't shake Jefferson's faith.